Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and tonight we continue our expectations series. We're going to talk about two players who actually are each, I think, at a crossroads to a certain degree, Marlon Humphrey and Tyler Huntley, two Ravens who went different directions in 25, but each has got another chance in 26. We're going to talk about these players with Jacob Abousbatan, a friend of the show that we picked up fairly recently from the Reddit community. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing
Jacob,
all right.
I'm sorry, Jacob.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. And just always excited to be here. You're one of my favorite people to talk the team with. So I always love coming on.
Always fun. I apologize for that. The Reddit community, I just want to hand out some praise to. I found a lot of good people over there who really know their football. And I shouldn't be surprised for that. But you have the thanks to the Buck Allen meme people for prejudicing me against the group, but I've really enjoyed my time over there, the conversations I've had, and a lot of the people I've met on the show. And Jacob, you're one of the good ones who jumped in right away and has now been on, what, three or four episodes and a draft show and whatnot. So I appreciate you joining us again.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Marlon Humphrey for starters. He'll be 30 in July. I think he very clearly remains at a crossroads in 26. I'm even a little surprised that the Ravens, did not reduce his salary this year or offer him a contract at a reduced rate. They seem to pick it up. They still have an option to cut him in theory if he was, showed up at camp and was, his play hadn't improved from 25. But a little surprising he's still here. And by all intents, it looks like he's going to play cornerback.
I mean, he is only removed 1 year from, an all-pro season. So, I mean, there's definitely some faith that's there. I do think it's, if anything, it's a little surprising given the new coaching staff. You'd think that maybe that would be part of the changes. But I think, they probably still have a fair amount of belief in him. I did hear someone say that he actually did perform a little bit better on the outside than he did in the slot. And I think most of the really bad plays you think of came through the slot, so maybe that will be a factor as well. But yeah, the Ravens are the Ravens. They like to take care of their players. It is business first most of the time, but there's that gray zone where if they've had someone on the team for a while, sometimes they'll throw them a bone, but that's a pretty expensive bone this year. So
yeah, they did it. They honestly, I think over the last 20 months or so, they've done it for Ronnie Stanley. And they've done it a couple times actually for Ronnie Stanley, because Stanley's contract was restructured kind of on the down low to effectively guarantee his 2027 season. They did it for Mark Andrews, I think, in terms of extending him as opposed to a player like Likely. And then they've done it for Humphrey here. All three of those guys are future Ravens Ring of Honor members, I would say, at this point. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely think. I mean, Stanley's probably been the quietest out of all of them, which is, interesting given that he has a left tackle and the importance of the position. He's just been very, very solid. I think the biggest thing for him in the last year was, just with Warhop and everything, he did kind of have like an season, but he was one of the only linemen that kind of muscled through it. So I think that says a lot about him. Andrews, I think people would be a little more controversial on him because he obviously started great, has a lot of unfortunate moments in the postseason that people really, stick to that about not liking him and kind of being upset that we retained him. Humphrey, yeah, I mean, outside of last season, he's always had, his times of ups and downs in a way. But that was the first year he kind of really had a rough year. So I think, yeah, for certain, he's a lock.
All right. Well, he's here as of now. There are accounting tricks that the Ravens could use if they did cut Humphrey that would allow a lot of money to be pushed into future years. It's just accounting. It's basically they have other means to do it too. But with Humphrey, if they did cut him, they can move a lot of money with a post June 1 cut into 2027 and beyond. Should they need the money for a different signing, so that would be a possibility. Had his worst season unquestionably as a pro in 2025, finished dead last, 69th out of 69 in PFF coverage grade. The season was probably not quite that bad in terms of traditional metrics. He did allow 9.3 yards per target, which is terrible. But he had an opposition passer rating of only under 91, which is about the league average these days. And it was on the back of four interceptions and just three touchdowns allowed that he was able to hold that down despite 98, I'll repeat that, targets last year.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times folks were kind of, who were more on his side, were trying to give him a little bit of leeway because Wiggins had a really, on paper, rough season as well. I mean, both of them were in the top, you know, five for allowed yards. The big difference is that Humphrey was on the field a good bit less than Wiggins was. I think percentage-wise, it was something like 80%, if not a little bit less. I mean, he still had four interceptions. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, turnovers are a big part of defense. So he still made some splash plays. And you do have to question the injury because we didn't really see that, you know, the peanut punch and everything as much this season. They did have a lot of issues with run fits and stuff that maybe contributed to that. Without going like deep into it, my question for him in the future is his mentality. I mean, he's always been that backyard kind of player where he's so good because he plays loose. He goes and has fun. Like, you know, you see this Twitter stuff and everything, and X. And my concern in the future is he going to be able to kind of rechange his mentality of being a little bit more technical to have that longer longevity and not rely so much on just his physical prowess that he's really had over the years.
Right. He does. You know, it's weird because the older he gets, the more his safety-esque characteristics and portable skills to safety really show out. And, you know, you don't want to move a guy to safety until it's time to move a guy to safety. That's really important, especially an outside cornerback who, if he could provide value there, even 90% of the value he did 2 years ago, you'd be thrilled to have that. But on the other hand, when it's time, it's time. Rod Woodson's time eventually came, and he made that transition really seamlessly. It was outstanding safety for the remainder of his career. And it's come for other players as well. And some players that have the portability, the skills, I think Marcus Peters probably fell into this category for some skills. He wouldn't have been a very good tackler for the safety role. And Chris McAllister, who never really made that transition, would have been players who had the portability of skills. But Humphrey, always a guy who came off man to make interceptions, meaning not to his target, which is something, boy, if there's any particular safety skill you really want to have, that would be it.
Yeah, I mean, he's still somewhat of a ball hawk. I mean, even this season, the interceptions he did have are kind of in that realm of, like, it wasn't really his guy. He snuffed out the pass. I know a lot of it's been a huge talk with him moving to safety. I don't know with the roster acquisitions. I mean, obviously it's still before the season. There's a lot of things that can change. It doesn't seem like that's the plan quite yet. And I always do wonder if maybe that's what's tied to the contract as well, is that they're really just allowing this to play out, see how he does another year at cornerback, and then kind of make a decision on him kind of from like ground, you know, from a fresh start moving forward. But I mean, we've talked about it. I do think he'd be, you know, good in the role of a safety. I just, before Harbaugh was gone, I guess it's a whole new world. I didn't know where he would fit into a safety based on the packages we were running, because we like to have him in that, like, the nickel and slot. But now, I mean, with Minter, who knows? Like I say, it's going to be interesting to see how they move around, but there's a lot of safeties, I feel like, on the roster already.
There are, and they just picked up Kayvon Wallace, who's another, you know, veteran safety, and a guy who honestly is probably just challenging Keandre Jackson for his spot. I think the Ravens would be happier if Keandre Jackson clearly won the spot from Kayvon Wallace, given the additional years of team control that remain there, and the fact that Jackson's an outstanding special teams player. And by the way, that's something that Wallace also brings to the table, and is very similar. A pure strong safety, not even really a guy that's an obvious split field fit, but neither is Jackson. And so that's something Jackson needs to prove this this preseason, this camp, is that he can adapt well to that that split field role to be the next guy up. And that's important because the Ravens have to have a backup there who can step in so that Kyle Hamilton doesn't need to move to the back end if either Starks or Hawkins were to get hurt.
I mean, that's always interesting because there's almost like a dichotomy there with Humphrey, with Hamilton, because you want him to be down in the box and have that fluidity of moving around. But I mean, since he's been here, some of our best overall defensive performances was when he was a little bit further off the line. So it's really interesting because we have a lot of examples of the defense thriving with him close to the line, and then a lot of times with him further back. Because I can't remember what year it was. It was either his rookie or right after, but he was forced to end up playing true safety, and they ended up shifting defense. It had to been the first year 24. Of Orr, because because now I remember, like, they moved him back, and all of a sudden, you know, things seemed fixed, and the defense finished the season out. So I just, there's a ton of possibility. I mean, that's the good side of it is that with Humphrey, if he can end up playing safety, there is still options. It really just comes down to if they want to decide which options to kind of fall with him. Because again, they're going to have to address if he still wants to get some type of pay or is willing to be more team friendly. And after they navigate the finish of this contract anyway.
Yeah, it was 23. He basically played slot corner for a lot of the season when they was exceptionally effective. And he did, you know, he has some play labeled as strong safety too during that time. But 24, it was about week 10. He moved to the back end. You're exactly mm-hmm. right. And Ardarius joined him there shortly. And they got rid of Marcus Williams and Eddie Jackson. And the secondary was in large measure fixed by those moves. So, I don't disagree with you that there's evidence that he can provide for you and help the team on either end. I just think he's far more impactful closer to the line of scrimmage, where mm-hmm. he basically is a wrecking ball on that strong side of the field, the best horizontal defender the NFL has to offer for that strong side.
Yeah, just being as great as he is, though, with Hamilton, it is just nice to have that, you know, that ability to kind of move him around. And that's why he's such a great player. It's just the point being is just the good news is that he can provide it both of them. But I agree that we want him to be in that more playmaker role closer to the line.
Right. And then, of course, he plays a lot of dime. We're talking about Marlon Humphrey. Marlon Humphrey as mm-hmm. a safety, he wouldn't be playing dime. Marlon Humphrey would be playing a split field role. Mm-hmm. And he might come up on dime snaps to jump into the slot. Potentially it would be a question whether or not that's the right role for him or not, or it could be Keon Martin is in there. And frankly, once they got Jalen Hawkins, I think Hawkins is probably ahead of Humphrey in terms of the pecking order to play safety. I think that mm-hmm. I think that's clearly true right now, given, you know, Hawkins, there's some expense bringing him in here, and he's a guy who, you know, comes with a world championship pedigree and good, you know, good play in a split field role. So I think it would make a lot of sense for him to stay back there. In fact, I think it makes more sense even for Jalen Hawkins just to move to the free safety spot entirely and take that, with Starks moving to that split field / rotational role, we'll call it, where he is more often called upon to jump back from a half field role up into some sort of robber or closer to the line of scrimmage role.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing about having a player like Humphrey, assuming everything does work out at safety, is yes, he would most of the time do the split field, but you allows you on a situational basis to throw in wrinkles with him returning back to like a dime roll or something like that. And again, it just has options. That was probably one of the most disappointing things about this season, is that on paper the defense looks stacked, and it's going to be that way again coming next, you know, next season. And hopefully the biggest difference is going to be the coaching with Mentor really heading the defense and having a little more creativity and not just creativity, but like just plain logic. So again, they're in a good position outside of the money. I mean, if you took away the contract part of it, they're in an absolute fantastic situation, I think, with the secondary as a whole. I really like Wiggins. I think that Hamilton's obviously a star player, and then Humphrey has the ability to move around. And I mean, they can pretty much use him like Hamilton light in a way. He's just not going to probably be as effective in his age and his performance. But again, I mean, AP season a year ago. So, I mean.
And hurt. So he's got things to point to in the things, as you mentioned earlier. So I guess I understand there's really only two reasons to keep him on the roster when you think about it. for the additional $7.3 million. One is that you could believe he can return towards AP1 form from 24. And that coupled with the thought that the injuries played a big part in his poor season. So that's number one. And number two was the hope for a position change. And the Ravens have already kind of ruled out that position change with their offseason acquisitions, with Jalen Hawkins being acquired. Obviously, that's another safety. They now certainly have all the starting talent they could possibly need, and they have paid heavily for it with a combination of draft capital and cap expenditures. Starks is still a first-round pick, and it makes decent money, by the way, already on his rookie contract. And Hamilton, obviously, both a first-round pick and makes the highest safety salary in the game, and or will over the life of the contract. And then Hawkins, who they brought in for not insignificant money, who clearly they intend to play. It's pretty clear at this point they don't intend for Marlon Humphrey to play a safety role in 2026.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd really add to that, though, is it's going to be interesting to see with Mentor and kind of what he did with James back in the Chargers. I almost wonder if they're loading up the secondary so much because of where our linebackers are at, and that we're really just going to that's traditionally how it's been the last few years anyway, that we really replace a lot of times linebackers being on the field with nickels and safeties anyway. But I'm really wondering if the plan is to just absolutely lean into that and try to create really exotic looks. And that might be why they're really acquiring these. And maybe they have a plan to use all these guys in some shape or form simultaneously. I don't know what it would look like. I'm trying to think, but yeah.
Like four safeties, it's pretty easy to know how that would look. it would have to be Hamilton at dimeback in that situation, two on the back end, and then a slot corner safety, which could be like a Humphrey.
But to what, I guess really the question is like, to what extent and how often, I guess, is the question. Like,
I mean, is that going to be like a face off
a defense?
A lot of times, like somebody says like that, and they ask a question, and it's a rhetorical question. This happened at work to me all the time, and marketers in particular are notorious for this kind of stuff. And I would usually say, well, let me answer your BS rhetorical question with an actual answer. And the actual answer is that Marlon Humphrey would probably move this slot. And the actual answer in terms of how often is, you know, they play 28-30% dime in a year where they have normal game script, and they've played 34.5% dime and quarter with extreme game scripts of 2000, and 42% dime with the double extreme game scripts of 2019. So the dime package is, not only is it played a lot, it's very important when it's on, because of those, it's on high leverage downs that you employ it. So it doesn't have a weighting value of the percentage that it's on the field. It's higher than that. So if they played it 28% of the time, it might have 45% of the total importance of the defensive snaps.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I follow along. And like you say, it is a little rhetorical. It does seem like that's kind of the plan they're going for. But again, they're all in. Whatever they're planning on doing, they're all into it, and they're going to lean heavily into it. And again, I mean, I've seen criticism of it. You know, people jokingly talked about, like, you know, how they would rage if we drafted another safety, which I get it, you know, that would have been a little bit funny. But you know, we're making these acquisitions, and like you said, you got a guy like Hawkins, who I, like you said, was outstanding, doesn't necessarily have the longevity of proof yet, but was absolutely outstanding. And you're bringing those guys in when you're already paying someone else. I'm going to go ahead and be optimistic that, like I said, there is a very defined plan to have these guys out there as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm with you entirely on that. So I think we'll see that. So one other thing to do this is about the first time the Ravens did this, was they played some traveling cornerbacks this last year. The Ravens have been a team that historically has been very set on allowing cornerbacks to play their own side of the field. And there are a lot of reasons why that's better. There are some reasons why it's weak. The primary reason why it's weak is you're letting the offense dictate the matchup against your guy. So if you have Ja'Marr Chase or you have T. Higgins and you want to match him up against Brandon Stevens on that left side of the football field, offensive left side, you know he's always going to be there because Brandon Stevens played exclusively right cornerback. in terms of a player like Humphrey or like Wiggins and Humphrey last year, they actually traveled a fair amount. And Wiggins apparently was the instigator of that, asked to, hey, give me the responsibility to cover the number one guy. I'm up for it kind of thing. He had a little bit of a tough year, by the way, particularly in man coverage. Particularly in zone coverage. He had a much better year in man coverage, and it might mean that the traveling makes more sense. And I look at the two players, they're so drastically different in terms of how they play the game. It really makes sense. You know, both of them attack the catch points. They're similar in that way, but Wiggins is very fast. Humphrey is not as fast anymore. Humphrey's a more probably physical defender otherwise in terms of coming up to make plays. I'm not saying Wiggins doesn't have any dog in him. Don't want to knock that with him, but he also has the you know, the punch out capabilities we've seen over the years for forcing fumbles and the off ball skills. I mean, it really seems like when you have two players that are that different in terms of how they approach the cornerback position, you do well to travel and kind of dictate the matchup in the way you'd like between the two opposing receivers they might face.
And then, I mean, I wonder though, like, I guess when you have two guys that are completely different, it gives you two very different options, like you said, to do the traveling. But on the other hand, what you may be potentially losing out is, especially in zone, is the combination of what their abilities bring together on a side of a field. So I think really, I mean, because it's going to really come down to who we have across from Wiggins. Like I said, I don't think that's going to ultimately be Humphrey. I don't think anyone's really suggesting it's where he's going to be in a primary role.
Across meaning same side or across meaning left and right?
Left and right corner. Okay. But basically what I'm getting at is that, like, it's great to have two different tools to cover two different type of receivers, but where you might end up having an issue and why the Bengals, for example, can cause so much issues with us is sometimes you just have two really good receivers who end up exploiting both of our guys' weaknesses. So it's going to be on Mentor to decide, like, this is the week to do this, this is the week not to do this. And it's really going to come down to that. I mean, it's just, in the day, it's good strategy, bad strategy, because they have the ability. But also, like I said, if you're going to be against Higgins and Chase, who can potentially exploit the weaknesses of each of them, then, you know, you don't want to travel that week. But again, that's going to be, I like to think I'm knowledgeable. That's probably a little bit past, you know, my knowledge on it, but I can see cases for both of them. Cause like you said, you want to have two different players that can match up well, but you also, in my opinion, you want to also make sure you're not putting yourself at a disadvantage by having the match instead of having them maybe both play on the same side of the field situationally.
Yeah. I'm with you. The Ravens certainly have appreciated their normal sides, and there are advantages from it, certainly in terms of favorite shoulder of coverage and whatnot that we've talked about before. Let's get into what it looks like for a good and a great season. So just good season first. What does a good season look like for Marlon this year?
I mean, he's got to get back to just not having the breakdowns in coverage. I mean, statistically, before you get to advanced statistics and you're just looking at like raw statistics, I mean, he had an okay season, it looks like, on paper. And, you know, if he can maintain that and then just not really have those lapses that were kind of backbreaking in a lot of situations, that's a good season for him. It's just not having those breakdowns. And again, the hopes is that part of that was tied to Orr, but there were a lot of times where I think we talked about the Steelers game, just getting beaten flat out by who was it?
DK.
It wasn't Metcalf. I don't know why I want to say Thielen. Was Thielen on the team at that point?
Thielen was, but it was there were a handful of different guys who beat him for big plays, and Humphrey got beaten on the right side of the field. I think you're thinking on one of the plays.
Right. It was basically a seam. I swear it was Thielen, but basically it was a great pass by Rodgers. I think that's kind of what we alluded to, is that it was one of those times that, like, yeah, it was a great pass. It's understandable that he got beat, but he still could have made a play and didn't. When you see more of those situations where he's making that play, maybe not a turnover, just not getting beat pretty much on a consistent basis is the baseline I think he needs to get back to.
Okay. All right. And no specific statistical thing. I didn't have any either, by the way, so I'm not asking you to, but that's a, you know, it's a fairly qualitative good season. I'm going to be similar. Active for at least 15 games. Returns to a level of play no worse than the league average. The combination of PFF coverage grade, yards per target, and offensive passer rating. I'd look at all three of those. They all bring you some different information. And I want him to be no worse than the league average in aggregate when you mix those things together. Better tackling returns. He didn't have a great season as a tackler, but I think a lot of that really was based on the hand injury. Mm-hmm. And he has a 12% missed tackle rate or better. So there's a stat for you. Plays where needed, including in rotation, so the Ravens can determine how they may best utilize Wiggins, Awuzie, Hamilton, and even Tampa if they want to include him in some sort of outside rotation. Awuzie, by the way, had an unbelievably good year last year. And it's kind of, I don't know, insulting is not really the right word, but it might not be the right call to just install Humphrey ahead of a player like Awuzie who mm-hmm. after the year he had.
Yeah, no, Awuzie definitely was a huge surprise and I think a fan favorite because of it. Not to get off topic, but I mean, even with him, like I just, everyone kind of faltered off. Like you mentioned Wiggins and really his struggles really did come, I felt like, in the last six games of the season, and it was kind of the same way for Awuzie, just not as drastic. But I do agree with you. Like Awuzie should be a little respect on the roster position when the time comes.
Yeah. Well, it's nice. I do feel like with him back, and I thought that was a very good signing. Mm-hmm. The Ravens are in a position where they like their top three corners, but there is an issue that they're just above the norm. Even though Wiggins is a third year player, you know, they're kind of above the norm in terms of age at the position with two guys who are going to be 30 years old this year. And a defensive lineman is going to be 37, and a defensive lineman is going to be 39, and, you know, all of those things are going. They might go out and get Jadeveon Clowney, and it might still be the right move. So it's quite an old defense that is due for a fairly dramatic draft overhaul over the course of the next few years. It won't be something they can fix with Band-Aid free agency fixes. You know, Travis Jones is on a second contract. He's not a super young guy anymore, although he's very mm-hmm. good. Nnamdi Madubuike, we don't know who he is anymore, but he's certainly on a second contract and costing the Ravens a ton of money, so they really need to find out. you've got to figure out a way to replace your older players. Unfortunately, I think that it probably, all of the age that they have on defense is probably leading to a Roquan Smith departure after 26.
Which I think personally would be the right move. I think Smith has really not been benefiting from, you know, obviously the last years of scheme and everything, but he's left it. He still ranks very highly in a lot of different statistics. And it just watching the field, I've been left wanting more. And again, that might not be entirely his fault, but like, I'm a huge fan. I really like Buchanan and stuff like that. Granted, you know, he's more Sam often, but yeah, you're right. I mean, they're coming up on a wall with the age. On the other hand, I mean, we've also had a lot of success over the years with a slightly above average age defenses. So I'm not at this point put down by it. But it's definitely something that needs to be considered in the future. Because like you said, if you have all these old players and then you have guys like Wiggins, who is young now, but by the time, you know, maybe the next 2 years, those contracts come out, you're left back with like a huge void of talent again, because they're all leaving. Sure, Wiggins is great, but who's across from him? Awuzie is going to be gone. Humphrey's probably for certainly going to be gone. I mean, just based on his age. And then, I mean, how old's Hawkins even?
Hawkins is maybe 28 or something right now, I think. I mean, he's not super expensive, so I'm not too worried about it. But the young guys they have on defense are like Buchanan, Starks, obviously, still Hamilton, I would say. He'll be here till 2030 and will still be a fairly, you know, will just be middle-aged then as a defender, and Wiggins. Yeah, they don't have a lot of really young players on the defense. Oh, Mike Green. Mike Green,
like Green
and
just brought Young in. But we don't obviously know how that is, but anyhow.
All right, go to a great season. Talk about that. And then maybe we handicap at the end of this what we think the chance is that Marlon Humphrey will be back in some role in 2027. So you can be thinking about it while you tell me what a great season is.
I mean, a great season, it's when you have someone who is so successful up until last year and you're asking that question, it's, you know, you kind of, you're going to end up either falling too far low, I think, of what you expect, or too far high of him just immediately returning back to, you know, that AP level. I think for the four interceptions, I think that's more than enough when it comes to contribution. So something like that would be great. I'd like to see, again, kind of to tie to my last point about him making those plays, just being more involved with the pass defense and seeing a lot more pass breakups as a whole. I don't feel like he had a ton of those this year either. Yeah. And then what I think I need to see most from him, especially if he ends up somehow being moved to safety, given the roster, is I got to see him be more dominant in the run fits, because that's going to be a big part of, I think, of his role, especially if we're playing, you know, a little bit lighter boxes, is I need to see him be, you know, getting down and dirty and really fighting at the line, given the opportunity. There's a few times this year that, again, it could completely be aligned with his injury, that it just wasn't his normal effort.
Yeah, I one that really sticks out to me was the play that got outside against Green Bay. It might have gone for a touchdown or just a long run up that right sideline, where Hamilton had some sort of run blitz or was in the backfield early on that side, and then Humphrey had to maintain his outside leverage to make sure that he was able to make the play, and they got wide of him. And got him taken care of in a big game. I forget if Willis ran the ball on that play or if it was their running back, but it was on the right side, a right side run during that game.
And again, it's just you don't want to ever project anything onto the players that you don't know is true. And like I said, especially when they have an injury. I don't know if it was tied to the injury, if it was, you know, maybe just the demeanor of the defense as a whole. Again, I said earlier, his what made him makes him great was kind of that childhood backyard football play that you kind of see him out there.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support and therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Having fun, being aggressive, making, you know, just making those type of aggressive stops. And it didn't seem like he had, like, the, you want to use a quote, like the dog in him last year. So maybe it's not a statistical number that I want to see to have a great season. I just want to see him return to the form of, you know, kind of being a bully in the backfield. And again, there might not be a number that goes along with that, but I just want to see him get back to the at least the physical side of himself.
Okay. Hey, that's very reasonable qualitative request. And had a great season. I think he's capable. I want him active for 16 plus games at the 80th percentile. Delivers top flight downhill play with some pass rush from slot corner when he's there. I don't know how much slot corner he's going to play. He may be the guy. Maybe Keon Martin is the guy on third down. Neither would completely shock me. Wouldn't shock me if Chandler Rivers got time there on third down. I think it's probably a little less likely as a rookie that will occur, but they may really like him. And you know, one thing I can tell you for sure is that Minter is inheriting Humphrey in a certain sense. He has a good idea of who he is, but he's also inheriting him. He's coached him before when he was here before, but it's the way he's not his player. Whereas Rivers, certainly he was in the room when he was drafted. So that's a good sign that he's positive on the Rivers selection. And it'd be hard for me to believe that the Ravens would make a defensive back selection without him being excited about it. Now, they may not make every defensive back pick that they wanted. He might have said, well, give me Caleb Downs. I can win the Super Bowl with Caleb Downs in round one. Now, they didn't have a chance to get him, but they might have. They were getting close to the point where he might have been on the board when they selected at 14, but Dallas jumped up and took him at 11, if you remember. It could be that Minter would have said something like that. Look, I can win with average inside linebackers. I can win with an average pass rush even by having scheme. But if you give me Caleb Downs, I mean, that guy is a chess piece I can move all over the field, and it effectively would almost give me two Hamiltons to play with. You could see him, that pick not being made despite his tremendous excitement about it. But I can't imagine that they would draft a player and Rivers would be the case where DaCosta's excited about him, but Minter is not, when he's both a defensive coach and a former defensive backs coach. I can't see that being the way that would play out.
No, I mean, I feel like, wholly my opinion. I for years, actually, this was such a big point for me when I want to say, I think the oldest post that I had about it, I was looking through, was back in 2020, about basically with Harbaugh and his involvement potentially in the drafting. I think DaCosta really does oftentimes find guys he likes, but really does lean on the coaches. So a big part of that was obviously the tenure of Harbaugh. I have zero doubt that this first round, Minter is his first year being a coach, that he was not heavily involved in these selections, because I feel like that's where DaCosta is as a GM. Maybe moving forward, he'll be a little more stout, but I cannot foresee a situation that he was not, hey, get in here, these are the guys I like. Is there someone you like better? If not, out of these guys, you know, who do you like? And I feel like that's a big reason we still did end up landing on Lone instead.
I think there's a natural consensus building in DaCosta. And I think I heard it with the Starks pick a year ago, and him basically pushing back on his scouts and saying, look, everybody's got Starks here. Are we sure he's the best player by a wide margin, you know, that's on the board right now? And, I think he's just doing what he needs to do to build a consensus that, he thinks they can live with both then and after the fact when they come back and talk about it. So, in terms of the play, absolutely, that's the most important thing. He's got the final call. And I've got to feel like even in that fifth round with Chandler Rivers, he said, look, I've got four guys I might take here. Chandler Rivers is one of them, but there's also these other three guys. My number one on this group would be Rivers. How do you feel about that? I would be shocked if that sort of discussion did not occur, at least there. Mm-hmm. And he at least got a no worse than a positive or tacit. Would it be tacit approval? It would really be a positive approval from Minter on the topic, because it really is Minter's defense. And Minter, you know, being the head coach and defensive coordinator, there's additional consensus building value that DaCosta does by including his coach / defensive coordinator at that level. When you have a CEO head coach, it might not be as important to do that. I don't think it was as important with Harbaugh to make Harbaugh happy on the selections. Or if you do it, I'd certainly weight it towards lower draft capital, because I don't think Harbaugh had particularly good judgment on the matter. I guess we'll see, you know, from the Giants draft this year. But you know, he was a big advocate for Ben Cleveland, and frankly, so was I. So that doesn't do me a lot of good. But he had some players he's liked over the years, just I think disproportionately more, and he's held on to them. Daniel Faalele is another one that you could point to as being in that category. But regardless of the case, I think that the need to make a head coach slash DC happy with the players you draft on his side of the ball is more important than doing it for a CEO head coach who has, you know, presumably a very balanced set of needs, you know, across the team he wants to fill.
Yeah. And I go ahead.
I did have a little more on Humphrey. I just want to finish this before we get too far removed. But so I talked about wanting to see him have that tough, like downhill play and some pass rush when he plays slot corner. So it's something he's been good at. He brings a lot of value rushing the passer from there. And the Ravens have brought it generally from that slot corner position. I hope they continue. His coverage rebounds dramatically from the 2025 season with improved pass rush, better safety play, and defensive cohesion. Now, call it structure, scheme, you know, the lack of predictability, the greater willingness to try different things, you know, whatever it might be, I hope that all of those factors will contribute positively to Marlon Humphrey having a better season where he doesn't have to hold up in coverage for longer, as he did with a truly bankrupt pass rush this last year. It was a very, you know, it made it a lot harder on all the secondary guys. Continues to deliver turnovers with a combination of second man and off man skills. So I want to see interceptions in man coverage, sure. Do I want to see, some fumbles forced as he's the second man to get to the football. And I want to see him make some great second man interceptions again, because I think that leads to the possibility of a future contract. The last component I had is that the Ravens discuss extending him either during or after the season. Now, that doesn't mean enough in and of itself, because of course Humphrey is a longtime Raven and they're going to discuss it. It's just, I want it to be a case where both parties have interest. So Humphrey wants to come back to the Ravens and the Ravens want Humphrey back. And it's not just a matter of Humphrey basically begging for a roster spot or begging for any role he can have, or the other way around, that the Ravens are like, hey, look, we'd love to have you back in as a safety, but we don't want you as a corner. And Humphrey says, I want to play corner. I want them to have, some like-mindedness that says if he's coming back, this is the time for him to change positions. And at least it has to come with understanding of exactly where he's going to play. And then I think they could extend him during the season, potentially. They could extend him off after the season. And I think that the most likely thing is probably he walks after the season, whether that's into retirement, maybe if he had an injury-filled season, or to a different team if he just has an unsuccessful season.
Yeah, and like I said, just last thing to really touch on that is, I don't really, you don't get the sense from him that he wouldn't be pliable for what the team's needs are. I think ultimately it's going to come down to obviously like money. I mean, for many players, and it's not, I don't foresee him even being crazy about it. I wouldn't be surprised if he took a more team friendly deal, but I also don't think he's going to take, you know, something like a absolute minimum or anything like that. He seems like a kind of person that probably believes he's got enough in the tank to stay in the league, like you said, bar the injuries. So either way, I think it's going to play out well for both parties. Like I said, I do think that they can come to consensus like we typically do with these long-standing players, whether, you know, it's with us or otherwise. And I think we have a good track record of, you know, we sometimes maybe release guys a little too late, but we do typically have a track record of if they go somewhere else, it is certain that it was time. You know, like they go other places and they may have like, you know, just a very basic type of situation. Go ahead.
And that's usually with guys who've already played two contracts. So, you know, they've lost a lot of players after one contract that they just couldn't afford them.
Correct.
Pernell McPhee, Za'Darius Smith, Matt Judon, Adelis Thomas is after a couple contracts. But, you know, they've lost a lot of players where they just couldn't afford to keep them. But yeah, you're really talking about, yeah, maybe we could afford to keep him, and maybe it's just not the right idea to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Great stuff. Great discussion, by the way. Let's move on because we're really running long here, but Tyler Huntley shouldn't take us as long here.
Yeah.
he turned 28 in February. He was rewarded for what were two outstanding starts that kept the Ravens in the divisional race in 2025. Got a 2-year, $5 million deal. Very team friendly, I would say. It's not paying a lot to your backup quarterback. And I don't think there's a world where the Ravens can pay a lot of money to their backup quarterback. They actually gave Cooper Rush a little more money the previous year. But I think that the appropriate thing to do with Lamar Jackson is just realize when you don't have Lamar Jackson, you're probably hosed. And hopefully this is a team that has enough other assets, probably primarily on defense, that they can still win without him. if they have to go to Huntley.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Huntley in the sense that I definitely think that he's not as good as a lot of people who were like asking for him when the whole contract with stuff was happening. But I don't think he's nearly as incapable as a lot of people think he is as well. I like to point out, I mean, they were the times that he was bar the LA game because it, like he just got in there that week. Every other quarter that he was in, they were averaging like 9.5 points per quarter. What the biggest thing for me for him is that it shows what the offense could also do with Jackson. And that's kind of the big thing that I loved about Huntley's performance this year is that, I mean, they had two games. They had one, they scored 30 points and one, they scored 41. And against New England, granted, you talk situational, we scored 24 points. 14 points of that was when Huntley was in. Mm-hmm. And I don't think like if people hear that and they automatically jump to like, oh, you're comparing him and Jackson. And it's really not. It just shows that the mindset of what our offense can be. Like we talked about before where it just seems like the offense was so hyper aggressive in ways when Jackson's in there. Part of that was scheme. Part of that was Jackson's willingness and wanting to be more aggressive. But what I love, like I said, what I love about Huntley is him and his noodle arm still were able to put up a ton of points if the team is willing to get everyone on the same page and do that. And I do like the fact that we have him because I think over a 16 game period, yes, you would be hosed if we lost Jackson. I think that in a short 2 or 3 week period, 4 week period, even I would feel comfortable. Like I said, if he was playing, I wouldn't do a whole season. People would figure it out. It wouldn't work out the whole season, but I like having him because he's just enough of an accurate a thrower, obviously not deep thrower, but just enough an accurate thrower, timing thrower, and mobile to kind of keep things going for a few seasons before people can, a few weeks before people yeah. can adjust. So I really do like having him on the roster.
In that exact position with you, really a game manager. That's really what it comes down to. I don't ever think that term is particularly pejorative. I didn't even think it was with Joe Flacco. That was what the team needed. The team needed a strong arm quarterback could lead an occasional drive, get people at a field goal range when a field goal is what they needed, move the offense reasonably well, but it didn't have to be at the Lamar Jackson level, and make sure that he wasn't giving the ball up and causing problems for the defense, who was doing a lot of the things that were necessary to win football games and were paid to do so. So Jack, obviously when Flacco got on the second contract, that's when the scales started to tip and he wasn't doing his cap share of the damage for the team in those years. But I was perfectly happy, particularly with the, you know, you go back to the one of the iconic games in team history is going into New England after the 2009 season and knocking the living snot out of them or the 2012 also. But the 2009 season, that Ravens team was outstanding. They were just a hair short of the Super Bowl. They ended up not being good enough to go into Indianapolis and win the following week. But they beat the living snot out of the Patriots when the Patriots fans' attitude was basically like, why would I want to go to a wild card game? I'll just wait for the AFC Championship and go to that. You know, it's just go to hell. You're the worst mass holes you'll ever find. Are basically doing that. And they went in there, they ran it 52 times. Flacco yeah. threw it 10 times, completed 4 passes in that game. And that was plenty. Yeah. That was all it took. Yeah. All right. Anyway, back to Huntley for a second. He completed 77.6% of his passes this year. We can't throw that away. Had 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Yet even with that great line like that, his quarterback rating was only 103. I say only 103 because I see a line like that and I'm thinking, boy, that should be something really good. The primary thing that held him back was a very low A dot on the year, just 6.2 on the A dot. And he also was sacked 8 times. That doesn't affect his quarterback rating, but it's a lot to be sacked when you only throw the ball 77 times.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think he came in there and played admirably. I mentioned the timing and accuracy which is really where he does shine at in that aspect. He's not going to throw it very deep down the field, but I think the biggest thing that he brought, I think, to the offense, even though he got those 8 sacks, what he had that at times Jackson lacks was that decisiveness to run the ball. And like I said, he doesn't have the same ability to buy the time that Jackson does. I mean, Jackson's obviously a freak athlete. This year, Jackson's injury really held him back from having that decisive and speed. And we saw the outcome of it. There was a lot of times that Huntley is like, oh, he's going to get sacked, but was able to take off being healthy and having that decisive. He would look at one or two reads and be like, it's not there, I'm going to go run. And like I said, I know that's one thing, again, I like seeing, because that shows me that, like, hey, let's try to find a way to implement this when Jackson's in as well, to go ahead and just, like I said, we don't always need to be ultra aggressive. And I'm really hoping that's something that Doyle, looking at his time with his team last year, I did think we saw more of, and I'm hoping we can implement.
We did see consecutive design QB draws for him also against Green Bay, yes, where, you know, he did some things as a runner. They I would not call them decisive runs because they were designed runs. So that's what I would call those two. You know, that was, he was taken off from the get-go. There was no thought of, you know, surveying the field and making a pass there. I think it might have been consecutive plays. It was certainly, I think it was on the same drive anyway, where it probably about 40 yards in total between those two plays, maybe 35. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exciting. I know it was a lot of fun to watch that entire Green Bay game. Ravens fans didn't have a lot to hope for at that point. They needed to win that game, and then they had Pittsburgh lose to Cleveland the next day. And certain enough, they hit the exacta and had the chance to play a meaningful Week 18 game. All right, let's see. The only other name I want to bring up in here is Skylar Thompson. He's now been signed by the Ravens. I didn't actually see anything indicating specifically that he'd been signed. I never saw anything come out from the Ravens saying we've signed Skylar Thompson to a 1-year contract or anything like that. But Skylar Thompson's on the roster now.
Well, the reason is because it was I did see something and it was buried under what's his name? They put them together.
Calais like Campbell.
No.
Kayvon Wallace.
God, what's the other quarterback? I can't remember his name for the life of me.
Diego Pavia.
Yeah, it was after he was signed, obviously, but it was funny. Like, I just saw, like, it was like Ravens signed pair of quarterbacks and only had Diego's name.
Right. The two of those guys were Diego Pavia and Fagnano.
Yeah.
So he was the other one they signed. But Skylar Thompson, they signed since that rookie minicamp.
True. Yeah, that's a good
point.
And
I have not seen that show up. I haven't seen the Ravens put it in their own Twitter column. They probably have. I probably just missed it. But one of the things, I don't seem to follow that as well as I used to, because they started charging $32 for TweetDeck a month. And I'm not going to pay that for it, but it was nice to have TweetDeck and have all my favorite accounts in columns that included, you know, the Ravens and it could be Jeff Zrebeck. It could be, you know, you have notification columns and you have your own chat column and whatnot that you could see. It was very handy to have all that. I just don't want to pay $32 a month for it. I'll say that. So now I just got to watch the feed. If I catch it, I catch it. All right. So anyway, Skylar Thompson, the point I was bringing up, do you see him as a guy who's on the practice squad, a guy who actually competes with Huntley during the preseason, a guy who is slated to play a lot of fourth quarter football during the preseason games, a guy that starts the year on a practice squad? Where does Skylar Thompson fit into this whole thing for you?
Well, no, I think he's going to get an opportunity to play some in the preseason. I feel like Huntley's a known quantity at this point. So I wouldn't be surprised if Skylar did get some time instead of Huntley, but we've seen in the last few years past, Jackson's not getting any legitimate time in the preseason for the most part anyway. So that might be Huntley's role to have that. And then they may shift around, the rest of the time between some of the other quarterbacks. But yeah, I think in the preseason, he's probably going to get substantial time just to get a look at it. I mean, we're still fielding technically five quarterbacks. I'm more interested to see like what's going to end up being. The other two guys are presumably, you know, practice squad players, but does that, you know, are they going to elevate them at all? Are we going to see them play at all? But yeah, I don't think Skylar's going to replace Huntley as the backup. I think Huntley and Jackson have a dynamic together that they feed off of, and I think that's uplifting in the locker room side of it as well. They seem to be very close. But I definitely think they're going to look at Skyler at the very least in the preseason. I mean, he did okay. Like you said, it wasn't like he was terrible at Miami, but it's also Miami. So I feel like you got to give an opportunity to someone who has at least shown decent play when you're talking about backup.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I don't think the Ravens will carry three quarterbacks. So I think Thompson's real duty is to determine if he's the practice squad guy they want to keep ahead of players like Pavia and Fagnano. And Pavia, the Johnny Manziel comp is a little bit too much for me. So we'll see how the guy shows out. If he has a big preseason, hey, no problem. He's the practice squad quarterback, or at least that's where I'd like to be. No way in hell do I see any of those three guys as a third quarterback carried on the roster.
Skyler potentially be like the emergency player? Because I think, is that the rule now? They can have like a emergency quarterback. I remember hearing about it. I'm terrible. I do not follow like deep stuff with this.
I think you have to have the third quarterback on the roster. I don't think you can have your emergency quarterback be a practice squad player, but I could be wrong about that. It's kind of like a 49th guy that they have as an inactive. So he's got to still be on your roster. There are reasons to carry a quarterback for that reason, that, you know, your Skylar Thompson will be better than whatever wide receiver they'd have playing the position. Whatever Adam Randall or somebody who's playing the position, you wouldn't want that. So Willie Snead, I know one time famously when Lamar Jackson came out with the out of the bathroom game, was the guy who was going to go into the at quarterback. All right, let's jump in. Talk about a good season right now for Tyler Huntley. What does it look like?
I mean, in the lack of being able to reserve last year as a great season for him, I mean, that was a pretty top-notch opportunity, I think. I mean, again, anything more. So I guess I'd mix good and kind of great together. But a good season is him filling in whenever needed. Pretty much, you know, if Jackson goes down, doing the same thing he did last year, I think would be a very good season for him. I do think what I would like to see, you know, is from him. Again, I think he has accuracy and timing down. He's not going to really develop a much bigger arm, but maybe, like I said, maybe see him bulk up a little bit. It's a little something. I don't know, but there isn't a lot for him as a backup quarterback. You know, like I said, your hope is that he's not in there at any point, if not necessary. So
the man who wasn't there, that's what we hope for him, the invisible man. I'm similar. Good season, plays well enough in camp that there's no question about the Ravens signing another QB to replace him. I think that's kind of a minimum. After that, whatever times he's forced into action, all I want him to do is take care of the football. And some of that probably won't matter in the games where he is forced into action. Those games may be lost. They may be won. They may be times where he's coming in blowouts and, you know, with the Ravens having a big lead or the Ravens trailing by a lot, then there may be very little win probability on the line. I still want to see him take care of the football so that if he's needed at some more important juncture, we still have the confidence that can continue. So that could happen in there. How about any difference for a great season? Or did you just kind of combine yourself? Cause I got one more thing for a great season.
No, I mean, I guess like you said, with a great season really would be very akin to what he did last year. I mean, like I said, it not only at the end of the day, I guess let me put it this way. At the end of the day, he kept the season alive. It wasn't on just his back. Of course, the team really stepped up, but you know, people were calling the season ended when Jackson wasn't able to continue at that time. And that is a mark of a great backup quarterback. You can't really ask for more than that, is to keep a season alive.
Yeah, you know what? I think I like that better than mine. Is you know, keeps the season alive, whatever that means for a 2-4 game stretch would be a great season. I actually think the season he had last year was more like a 95th or 98th percentile season for a backup quarterback to come in, win two football games against high quality teams both times, one of them on the road and with big offensive output both times, and have it be really necessary in one of those two games. It was really, really an impressive season. It's just about as high as you could be. But the rest of what I had is does not see this field except for mop-up duty, but plays well enough in practice and preseason games for the Ravens to pick up the cheap 2027 option, which is only about $1.5 million of cap they can save by cutting him, or even extend him You know, if that became part of the discussion, rather than just playing that one cheap year out, if the Ravens say, you know what, you're good enough, we'll give you the same deal again, and it'll be 3.5 for the first year and 1.5 for the second kind of thing, that could be even more exciting.
Yeah, it would be cheap. My as much as I like Huntley, my biggest concern with him with extending would be he's on the razor's edge right now. Again, like I said, I think he's better than people give him credit for, but it would take so little for him to just absolutely pretty much probably be ineffective. So extending him further, I don't know, as much as I like him, I would be for it at this point. A couple of years ago, I said before he went to the Browns, I would have been totally fine him staying on roster the entire time. I do believe in him as a player in his capacity as a backup, but he's getting to the point where I just feel like it's a razor edge that I don't know if I would walk, but I wouldn't fault, you know, I wouldn't obviously fault them if they kept him because of the money.
I'm with you. I thought it was a case of the price being right this year that I thought that I really liked the extension as opposed to trying to go out and take a chance on a younger quarterback who might, you know, be a player who would provide value down the line. You know, we've got to think also of nuclear scenarios that are involved. If somehow Jackson is unhappy with Minter, I think would be the primary thing, or Jackson is unhappy with Doyle and they don't get along and Jackson suddenly wants out of Baltimore, and it doesn't matter whether he plays out the contract or whether he's gone in 27, the Ravens could need a new quarterback in 28. And it would be nice to have a quality, you know, third year quarterback ready to step into action at that point, which would be not Huntley, as the starter on opening day, and also be grooming a guy that you would presumably draft in 28 to be your starter of the future.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing I think is that I'm curious to see, particularly next year, if they do take a swing at not maybe, I don't think it's gonna be like first round, maybe even second round, but I'm kind of curious to see if they reach for somebody. But it's such an issue though, because you're stuck between having an understudy for Jackson, which is difficult to find because there's very few people who are gonna, you know, match what he does, and then having someone who may be completely different from him. So you're basically drafting someone who doesn't quite fit into, you know, if he goes down, but then you're also like, if Jackson ends up leaving, now you're completely potentially restructuring everything that you're doing. I would like to see them maybe pick up someone in the mid round to be an understudy. I don't know who that would be. It's just Jackson is such a unique talent where you're really almost having to pick like, okay, we're having short term or long term for the development of the backup.
I'll give you the name that may have made sense, and it came with a lot of baggage, is Shedeur Sanders. He's available. I don't give a crap if Deion is calling me, telling me my son doesn't want to play there. I basically say, you know, that's not how the NFL draft process works.
I'm happy we didn't get him, but I actually said this the other day, I'm happy we didn't get him, but I'm also disappointed that we didn't, because I agree with you. It would have made sense long-term, I think, to have him. I try to avoid the drama stuff as much as possible. I was not happy with Diego, but that's a whole other thing. But yeah, I agree with you. I'm not upset we didn't get him, but I also do have a disappointment. I think he would have fit in to exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. All right. And then Devin Leary, the other side of that, where it was a guy who it was such a difference in type of player that it might not have made sense from the start. And obviously he didn't quite meet the minimum threshold for quality of play either.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, Jacob, just great talking football with you again. This is the hour has flown by. This is a couple of players I really enjoyed discussing. You brought a lot, obviously, to this conversation. Tell folks, if you want to talk about the Reddit community, but tell folks where they can reach you online if they want to talk football with you.
Yeah, I'm always perusing through Reddit. Again, my handle's Spitan89, which is SBITAN89. I'll definitely pick up a lot more during the season. I'm not an off season guy as much outside of talking to you, but I'm really looking forward to the season. I'm always open to chat, debate, whatever, you know, open mind, but I always like to stick to my guns too. So yeah, reach out to me.
All right. All right. Other folks out there, please use hashtag film study mailbag if you have a question or a topic you'd like to have included in a show in the future. We're going to go to some live shows, I think. Here's what I want from you if you're interested in a live show. Give me a good topic for a live show. An example could be doing a Friday morning GM as a live show. I think we will do one of those. But if there's another topic you'd like to hear discussed as a live show, you know, how the Ravens might line up defensively this year or something, where you think people, you know, might like to join it, ask questions, and we'd be trying to respond to that on the fly. I haven't done that type of content typically, but I'm very comfortable doing it, and I'm happy to do it. And if that's the way people want their content delivered, I'd love to have that be part of the way film study is done. So let me know, and by you can do that by email, by DM on Twitter, by a chat on Reddit, however you might want to reach me. I'm also at filmstudy21@verizon.net. If you want to email me directly, all those are possible ways to contact me. Jacob, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.